you for joining me. It is the Tuesday edition of Point of View, and we're going to be spending some time in this first half hour talking about the area of education. Last week, of course, we did some of those back-to-school programs, but I think you're really going to appreciate this, because if you've been listening to Point of View any length of time, we have sounded the alarm about some of the concerns we have about public education. I'm holding up, for those of you watching online, a book by Marlon Maddox, who, of course, was the founder of Point of View and the first host, Public Education Against America. That came out 16 years ago, so it's been around for some time. But just last year, I had a chance to see the interview that Pete Hegseth did with his co-author, David Goodwin, went out and bought the book, did some commentaries on it. And so then later, when there was a discussion about having him come and speak at our Point of View Gala, which takes place next month, October 5th, and you are certainly invited to come, he is the speaker, and we wanted to see if we could, before he comes and speaks to the audience, also talk about this book, which, as you know, I've mentioned and done commentaries on. Pete Hegseth is a co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend, also a Fox Nation host and a New York Times bestseller author, and he's an individual that has written quite a number of books. I think we first met in studio when he came, not to this studio, but one before that in 2016, in his book In the Arena. Since then, of course, he's had all sorts of bestsellers, American Crusade, Modern Warriors, and this one, A Battle for the American Mind, which was on the New York Times bestseller list, I think, for over 12 weeks, including four straight weeks at number one. Battle for the American Mind, Uprooting the Century of Miseducation. Pete Hegseth, welcome back to Point of View.
Hey, Kirby, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to October 5th. It'll be a great event.
Looking forward to seeing you face to face, but let's, if we can, educate people, because this is a book where you, and I really want to give credit to David Goodwin, who has done some really good research here, reminds us that when we go to the public schools, this indoctrination of 16,000 hours is something of real concern. And so half of the book really points out the problem. The second half talks about this idea of classical Christian education. But how did you get involved with this? Because that's not necessarily a topic you normally have written about until fairly recently.
Yeah, you're right. It was only a brief mention in the arena and the American Crusade. I did a chapter on education, but it's always been kind of a personal passion of mine, understanding how our society decides to pass on what is good and right and beautiful and true to the next generation. And I grew up in public school. My dad was a public school teacher. My mom stayed at home. The assumption was the yellow school bus and the local public school. And that's what I assumed I would want for my kids. Good enough for me, good enough for them. You know, if there are some things wrong there, we'll deprogram them. We'll instill values at home. And then I just started seeing more and more. And I ended up, through Fox and Friends, getting linked up with David Goodwin, who is a providential matchup to have the opportunity to work with him. He's the president of the Association of Classical Christian Schools. And we started comparing notes and sharing thoughts, and we realized if we come at this together, we can write a book that really dissects the problem of what the left has done and then makes the argument about how we can recapture the classroom for the next generation. And so we did. And when we started doing research, we realized the problem of public schools, and we prefer to call them government schools, is that the capture wasn't a 60s thing. It wasn't something of recent generations. This is something progressives have been laser focused on since the beginning of the 20th century. They saw the school as the most malleable institution that they could take over. And they wrote very openly about how they believed they could change the paideia, which is how we pass education to the next generation in our youngest of kids, by controlling the mechanism of school and creating different allegiances other than to God and to family, two big immovable objects that prevent statists and progressives from taking control of what kids learn. And so it was staggering doing the research and realizing the depth of the problem. But the first step to recovery for anybody is understanding the depth of your problem. And so the prayer of the book is that it would be a wake-up call, jarring, angering for people who read it when you realize how far behind we are, but then motivating to realize we're at the beginning of an educational renaissance. There are some people that saw this long before, like you mentioned, the previous host of the show, and they started their own institutions that focused on the way education used to be done across Western civilization in Christendom. And they're getting it closer to right than it's ever been. And there are more of those schools than there ever have been before. There are classical Christian schools. There's homeschooling networks. And so that we, as parents, we really do have the opportunity to ensure our kids get a real education and not indoctrination. You just have to look for it. And then we've got to fight to do what we can inside government schools. But my biggest message is get your kids out if you can, because we're very far behind the curve there.
In your book, American Crusade, you talked about the idea of fight back with common sense Americanism. But you began to say, you know, maybe you missed the mark because we need more than that. And all the way through the book, you remind us of sometimes when even attempts have been made to try to work within this system. You've got to recognize that whether you're talking about critical race theory, common core, of course, there's a whole chapter on the straight line from critical theory to Antifa. In some respects, you're trying to fight a battle, and I'm talking to an individual who's an Army combat veteran. If you don't fight it on the right ground, you're not going to win.
Yeah, it's a losing battle. I mean, the left has captured all the commanding heights, is another chapter of the book. We think of it as a college and university problem, which of course it is. But the goal of the left was always to push it earlier, and through mechanisms like the universities, but then teachers' unions, radical textbooks, controlling teachers' colleges, and then the curriculum, and now the state standards, and the testing, and the SAT. Every aspect has been captured, not just by like casual Democrats, but by hardcore godless leftists who want to turn America in a totally different direction. So you can elect a new school board, and that's great, and I think people should run for school board, and we need Christians in public schools. Those are all good things. But you are up against a behemoth that is determined to crush you, doesn't care about your kids. And so we argue for a tactical retreat, that this is not a winnable, to use a military metaphor, it's not a winnable battle. I mean, we are outnumbered and outgunned. And so trying to bring the public schools back from the brink of insanity requires retreating, creating institutions that we will fortify our kids right now. I mean, the house is on fire. It's not time to call the fire department, but first you get your kids out and you pull them out into safety. That's where we are right now in this process. And then, you know, it's years later, or, you know, in some states it's happening right now, but where you fight for public policy changes that change the yellow school bus in the public school system. But we're still a long ways from that. And it still requires a lot of education for parents to realize what kind of choice they have. COVID was a big wake up for a lot of people. But still, there's a lot of reasons and excuses that we make for ourselves and our families. Oh, I pay property taxes, or I went to that school, or my kids play sports there. All their friends go there. We don't want to move. And those are all understandable reflexes. But the alternative, is trying to deprogram your kids in schools that are pushing absolute nonsense into their brains for, as you said, 16,000 hours. So what's most important?
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with Pete Hegseth for just a little bit longer. We do have information about the book. It's been out for some time. You probably can find it in your local bookstore, but we have information about it on our website. Battle for the American Mind, Uprooting a Century of Miseducation. We'll continue our conversation right after this.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
The latest tool of those involved in the cancel culture has been the use of debanking. This occurs when a prominent individual or organization is informed by their bank that they will no longer be allowed to use banking services. Nigel Farage faced such a statement from his bank in the UK because he was perceived as a politically exposed person due to his previous involvement in Brexit. Now, the bank argued that their decision to close his account was since the bank account fell below its wealth limit. Farage admitted that his account was below the limit, but said that had never been a problem in the past. In this country, Dr. Joseph Merkula announced that his business bank accounts, along with the accounts of his CEO and CFO, and even the bank accounts of his family members, were all closed. He has had accounts with that bank for 18 years, but was shut down, he believes, because of his previous statements about the COVID vaccine. The National Committee for Religious Freedom, led by former U.S. Ambassador Sam Brownback, had its checking account canceled without notice, although its advisory board includes former U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions and former Alliance Defending Freedom President Michael Ferris and Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. The group was told they must disclose the list of donors and a list of candidates they intended to support if they wanted the bank to reopen their account. Perhaps you're noticing a pattern. These banks aren't closing the accounts of progressive individuals or politically liberal groups. They aren't prying into the rosters of other advocacy groups. That is why some members of Congress are ready to investigate these latest examples of debanking. They pose a threat to free speech and religious liberty. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free booklet on a biblical view on big data, go to viewpoints.info/data. That's viewpoints.info/data.
Truth has a price tag, but lies cost even more. The damage done when people don't tell the truth is beyond measure. Many today value power more than truth. But you're not like that. You know that truth is what sets us free. But you also know that truth is sometimes hard to find. Between the misrepresentations of truth, fake news, and bias in the media, academia, and more, it can be hard to know what is and what isn't true. You can help Point of View Radio be an oasis of truth in a desert of lies by joining the Point of View Truth Team. The Truth Team is the core support group that keeps Point of View's voice strong. Your support will make it possible to bring reliable truth and information to listeners across the nation. Get all the details today, right now, by visiting pointofview.net/team. Make an investment in a great future. Make an investment in truth. pointofview.net/team and 1-800-347-5151.
Listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Privileged to have with us today Pete Hegseth. And again, this book written with David Goodwin, The Battle for the American Mind, Uprooting a Century of Miseducation, and a section on the 16,000-hour war. Then a very good section, which I highly commend to you, The Unauthorized History of American Education. For those of you that have not taken the time to really dig into progressive education and the rest, that is certainly a great series of chapters. But then also A Solution as Big as the Problem, Reason and Virtue, Wonder and Beauty, a classical Christian education, something we've talked about so often here on Point of View. And so, first of all, Pete, when we talk about taking your kids out, doesn't mean we withdraw from the battle, because after all of us are paying for the schools with our tax dollars, and we spend more on education than we do on defense. And I'm speaking again to an Army combat veteran who recognizes how big the Defense Department budget is, but the Education Department, when you add it all up, is even greater.
Yeah. I mean, the goal is, and it's happening right now, thankfully, universal school choice, so that the dollars follow the parents to the institution of their choosing, not with the government not being in the middle of it, so that that money doesn't dictate what schools teach. And that we talk about phases. You know, Mao, a great military leader, a terrible political leader who killed tens of millions of his own people, talked about the phases of an insurgency. And that's what we're in right now, is an educational insurgency. And by phase two, when we lay out the plan of how we can take education back in our country, vouchers and school choice is central to it, because otherwise the size and scope of government education and the depth of indoctrination is almost impossible to overcome. So you have to start with the 1 or the 2 or the 3% who you can affect right now with homeschooling, with classical Christian schooling, with other forms of family and faith-based education, so that you start to just put the seeds in the ground, so that you can reap what you sow later on, the beginnings of a movement, and then change the way kids are educated. But we are so far behind the curve. And it's scary.
Let's, if we can, just maybe introduce a new word for some of our listeners, and it's paideia. We have mentioned that before, but it's been quite some time. And that really kind of brings us back to, if you will, kind of the worldview or the mindset or the structure of the difference between, say, the government schools and what you have, say, in the Christian school movement. Can you explain?
Absolutely. So I wasn't familiar with the word paideia until we started this project, and that was part of David Goodwin's education for me. But once you see it, you can't unsee it, and you realize how powerful it is. It's a lost Greek word with no direct translation in English, but what it really means is the enculturation or the education of our youngest, how we implant the vision of the good life on 10, 11, 12-year-olds, because most of who we are is formed by then. The left studied that. I mean, our founders understood that word because they understood Greek and Latin, and they focused on implanting Western Christian paideia onto kids, and it's how we perpetuated our republic. And we almost assumed that would self-perpetuate. The left said, no, our target is paideia and a different paideia. And so they always went for the youngest of kids. And you see it today. If you can challenge the assumptions of a child about what gender is, about whether there is man and male or female, or about whether there is a God, or whether if you're white, you're inherently racist, or if you're black, you're inherently a victim. If you implant those on the youngest kids, those become the assumptions upon which their education is based. And so we have to recapture paideia for our youngest with God's eternal truth to create a bedrock. And that's why back when the left and the progressives studied paideia, the first thing they had to remove was God. They knew that. That was central to their ability to distort the idea of human nature or our relationship with God, basic things like gender. So it was a long-term project that we're now seeing in sheer radicalism today.
Now, again, what you talk about, and again, David does a very good job as well, talking about what you might call Western Christian paideia, and the foundations of that are the things I just mentioned a minute ago, reason, virtue, wonder, and beauty. Maybe we'll only have time to talk about reason and virtue, but it seems to me that if you're really wanting to build a society on, of course, we've had it built on Judeo-Christian foundations, or the Marxists want to build it on a secular view, you have to change these views about reason and virtue, which is why today you have individuals saying unreasonable things, and the idea of virtue sounds like something from the 19th century that are as arcane or unimportant as buggy whips. And so that's really what is happening today in a lot of the education classrooms, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we chart how virtue became values became malleable, and that was very intentional. Yet virtue was the highest standard of our understanding of ethics throughout Western civilization, certainly for our founders. When's the last time you heard things like reason, beauty, wisdom, virtue in a government school? You can't. You don't. The framework is completely gone. So part of classical Christian education is reviving an understanding of those viewpoints. And not only are they gone from government schools, you mentioned reason. They've taken reasoning out of the SAT altogether because we don't teach logic and reasoning anymore. So kids can't reason. Then they add on Common Core, and the guy who created Common Core, which is a dumbing down of our curriculum, took over the SAT and got rid of reasoning. So it's now a test you can study for, as opposed to a test that measures your actual reasoning. So it's an all-out assault on the pillars of Western Christian paideia, and they did it subtly by replacing Christ with patriotism, which is a little disorienting for me and for everybody because we're patriots. But that's an easier target for the left to manipulate. And now they're going fully into the culturally Marxist paideia, where they're pushing an indoctrination of one particular view, which ignores all the things upon which our nation was founded. So we're trying to revive beauty. I mean, now we live in a world where beauty is only in the eye of the beholder, and we're not trying to reflect the creation of our creator by creating beautiful things that honor him. Those ideas are all lost, and we're trying to revive those. Classical Christians reviving those ideas. I see it in the hallway of my kids' school every time I walk through. None of it's perfect. The most important thing is what you do in introducing your kids to Christ. But what else do you do with those $16,000, and does it complement what you're trying to teach them at home and at church?
Well said. Again, a chapter on how classical Christian education works, so you could really understand what we're talking about. A chapter on an exhortation for parents. So some just great resources that I think would be helpful for anybody that is considering whether their children or grandchildren are going to go into the public schools. You identify the problem, you give a solution. But most importantly, Pete, I thought for just a minute, we also have a link to PeteHegseth.com. I don't even have to know how to spell his last name. It's not that hard to spell, but we have that on the website. website, pointofview.net, in case people would want to have you come and speak. And we are just looking forward to a great time with you on October 5th in our gala, because I know you'll be addressing some of these kinds of topics and really challenging all of our listeners, but especially those who can come that night to that event, to consider what it means to actually be willing to take these ideas into the arena and really be involved in what you call the American Crusade.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that event. I'm so grateful for what you do and to be a small part of what you do every single day to advance truth and beauty and goodness. And it'll be a great night. And I think we're over the target on something important here. I just found out from my publisher that Battle for the American Mind was the top-selling education hard copy book in the last 20 years. Like, people are thirsting for answers about where we go from here, and folks like you are charting the course. So I can't wait to be there. I hope folks come out on October 5th and join us. It'll be a great night.
Well, Pete, it's been a few years, I guess 7 years, since we saw each other face-to-face, so looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and thank you for being with us today here on Point of View.
Likewise. Thanks, Kirby.
Going to take a break. Let me just mention again, we have a link to his website, PeteHegseth.com, and you can find out more about that. That's his official website. You can, of course, get any one of the four books that I am familiar with, and of course, I have some of those on our shelf, and I went out and even bought this copy. I think we have one here for the ministry as well, but I wanted to buy it, and I've already done commentaries. You can go back and find a commentary. I think I did one about a month or two ago that you can find on the book in case you'd like to read that first. If you go to your local bookstore, probably the book is still there. It, as he said, was the best-selling education book in decades, and I think there is a reason for that. Some people that, including parents and grandparents, during the lockdown, began to see what their kids were studying by looking in their computers, and they're saying, first of all, you're not studying the basics, and you are studying some stuff that really you shouldn't be studying at all. And so a lot of parents are starting to say, maybe there is something that we need to change in this regard. And so that's why he starts out by talking about the lockdowns and pandemic. But since then, takes you through quite a bit of history, and I think you will appreciate the book. Also, we have it on our website at pointofview.net. Get it in hardback. I think it's now out in paperback as well. Of course, you can get it in Kindle. And when we come back, I've got an action item for you. So get your pen out, because there's an opportunity for you to make a difference. But we need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
You are invited to Point of View's Rebuilding with Truth dinner event, October 5th in Dallas, Texas. Special guests and speakers include Pete Hegseth of Fox News, The Blaze TV's Ali Beth Stuckey, and, of course, Point of View's own Kirby Anderson. There is much in our nation that is broken, and we can't repair what's broken, restore what's good, and rebuild a stronger America for the future unless we stand firm on God's truth. At this limited space dinner, our guests will share their insight on rebuilding America with a Christian worldview. For over 50 years, Point of View has equipped Americans with the tools to defend biblical truth in daily life. Learn how you can become an integral part of that mission by attending the Rebuilding with Truth dinner event in Dallas, October 5th. To register, visit pointofview.net/events. That's pointofview.net/events. The Rebuilding with Truth dinner event in Dallas, October 5th. Point of View will continue after this.
USA News Update. The Biden administration taking steps to carry out a prisoner exchange with Iran to free five Americans that are being held there. The FDA is approving updated COVID-19 boosters from both Pfizer and Moderna. Hurricane Lee could become a Category 4 storm later today. The slow-moving storm is out in the Atlantic, bringing rip currents to Florida and the Caribbean, but forecasters say it is unlikely to hit the East Coast. American scientist Mark Dickey safe after
Bridie on Radio and BridieOnRadio.com.
This is an amazing company that has sponsored both of us. And this is a way to have backup communications when the grid goes down.
Well, the situation became problematic, Mike, with the New Orleans, the latest hurricane, because people panicked. And this is one thing that I've learned from being associated with the satellite phone store for over a decade. People will call and order 600 phones at a time.
What?
It's like this, Mike. Anytime there is a crisis, people want these. And ladies and gentlemen, they've created such a good deal for Mike's viewers, my viewers, our combined viewers, that this is the only way you're gonna be able to communicate.
And that's the other beauty about these phones, is they can't track you because it's not talking to a cell tower. It's talking to satellites, you know, orbiting over the equator. So SAT123.com, folks.
The U.S. prepares to bolster troops in Eastern Europe, and tensions build with Russia.
Secretary Austin has placed a range of units in the United States on a heightened preparedness to deploy, which increases our readiness to provide forces if NATO should activate the NRF, or if other situations develop.
We have been consulting with allies in deployments and refining plans for all scenarios. We've always said we would reinforce our allies on the eastern flank.
Stay up to date on Brighteon Radio.
Treasure Island coins and precious metals. Mike Adams of naturalnews.com says 2020 has shown us that we must prepare for the unexpected. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your fiscal well-being during the coming financial pandemic. Shipments are delivered safely, discreetly, and securely right to your door. A precious metals IRA allows you to protect your retirement savings with the ultimate safe haven, assets of gold and silver. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Your metals are held in the form of real coins and bars in an actual depository under your name and on your behalf. Simply visit BrighteonMetals.com today. Gold and silver will be indispensable to your financial well-being. Shouldn't you at least look into it? Treasure Island coins and precious metals. We're here to help. Visit BrighteonMetals.com today.
Take a stand against bias talk radio.
I'm going to take a strong stand against it.
And listen to Brighteon Radio, where we give you both sides of the story.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
Brighteon Radio and BrighteonRadio.com.
Information can be delivered to your email inbox every morning. To sign up to receive them, go to pointofview.net/viewpoints. That's pointofview.net/viewpoints. Viewpoints commentaries with Kirby Anderson and Penna Dexter will help you make sense of the world around you. Once again, go to pointofview.net/viewpoints.
You are listening to Point of View. Opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
Back once again, if you had heard the interview with Pete Hegseth, again, we're looking forward to having him speak at our gala, our banquet that is taking place October 5th here in Dallas. Those of you in Dallas can certainly attend, but others, if you'd like to fly in or drive in, we would welcome you as well. I'm hoping maybe we can take some of the comments he makes at the banquet and use those on the program. Last year when we had our 50th anniversary banquet, there were some requirements that we could not necessarily show some of the things that were said, or because again it's a smaller group, but we'll see what develops out of that. But if nothing else, I'll give you a report, and I may come back now that we've talked about this and do maybe a few more commentaries on his book Battle for the American Mind. I think this is one of those big issues. Education is a big issue. It affects your children and your grandchildren. It affects the future of America. And we are just, first of all, even just apart from all the moral issues we just talked about, just from a sheer practical point of view, we spend more, if you add up all the educational budget, on education than we do on defense, because you have to add not only the educational spending in the federal government, the states, and everything else. And for that so-called bang, we don't get much. We spend a lot of bucks. We don't get much of a bang, do we? Because we find that on a routine basis, American students who actually have more money spent per pupil than almost any country in the world actually do poorly on all these various kinds of standardized tests. Of course, the solution from the activists is, well, let's get rid of the standardized test and let's lower the standards. I've talked about that before. So again, I commend to you the book. It is eye-opening, well-written, and it not only identifies the problem, but brings us back to some of the heritage of when we had classical education. Now they have classical Christian education. I would highly recommend that you check that out in your local community. Let's, if we can, come to our action item. This one is a little bit different in that when we give you an action item, we send you to our website, we give you some information so that you can then write your particular comments, and then we help send it out. In this case, we're sending you directly to a government website. So be aware of that. If you disagree with one of the questions being asked, or you don't like the format, or you wonder if the government is going to be, how they're going to use the material, I want you to know that when you click on the button to take you there, it will actually just take you to the government website, and then you can use that to then allow to make your comments. So there's a place where it says click here to submit a comment to the EEOC. When you do so, it won't take you to any website related to Point of View. It will take you to a government website called regulations.gov, and this one is for the EEOC. Okay, you ready for that? Now, the reason we're bringing this up, this shouldn't surprise you if you know this administration. Last year, the so-called Pregnant Workers Fairness Act was passed. We can have a debate about how worthwhile that was, but nevertheless, it's a law that ensures that all businesses that have 15 or more employees need to provide reasonable accommodations for pregnant women. Well, as good as that might be, leave it to this administration to say that one of those accommodations must be, are you ready for this? Abortion. So we think it is time for individuals to express their opinion directly to the United States government. So again, this will take you to their websites, not our website, but this takes you to regulations.gov. It says regulations to implement a Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And it is where the bill, which passed by bipartisan support because everybody thought that it was going to help pregnant women in the workplace make reasonable accommodations. You understand all those which would be required. And I'm not going to get into the details because you can find that out yourself. But leave it to the EEOC, that would be the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, to say, well, this law really means that one of those conditions is elective abortion. And so I think you can come back to see that this is not what was intended. If you have any doubts, let me quote from a Republican and a Democrat. The Republican in the Senate, Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, said these regulations completely disregard legislative intent and attempt to rewrite the law by regulation. He was one of the sponsors of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. One of the Democratic sponsors was Senator Bob Casey, who is a Democrat from Pennsylvania. And he said the decision to disregard the legislative process to inject a political abortion agenda is illegal and deeply concerning. I suspect eventually this probably will be challenged in court, but why not allow you the opportunity before that takes place to express your comments? Now, you might say, well, I'm not sure I know all about this. We, before you go to the website, have a few sample comments that you might want to cut and paste, or you might want to paraphrase or something like that, so that when you then land on the particular place where you submit your comment, which again is at regulations.gov for the regulations to implement the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, you have some talking points. You can use your own. You can make some up. You can cut and paste. We make that available. But again, I want you to know, when you click over, you're not going to our website. website. You're going to the government website, so be aware of that. And we have now given you an action item. And if you think that pregnant women should also be accommodated to have an abortion, and that the federal government is trying to do that without any kind of passage of the United States House and Senate, I think we've given you an action item that is worthy of your investment of a few minutes of time. Let's, if we can, go to my commentary today, which, interesting enough, is fortuitous because it relates very much to the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. I write these a few weeks ahead of time, but this one's called Debt and Debasement. And I point out that when you run so much money through the federal government and you don't even come close to raising revenue through taxes or other means, you're going to continually have a problem. Either you're going to run up massive debt and eventually have to devalue the dollar because you'll have to print more dollars to cover for that, or else you're going to have to default. And I don't think anybody is seriously thinking the United States government's going to default. But as this particular piece comes out, and I give you some wonderful statistics from Kevin Hassett about what has happened in the past. I give you an example from the Roman Empire where they debased the currency. I give you an example from Germany after World War One where they debased the Deutschmark. And then I bring you up to date with what's going on now. This is certainly something I wrote a while back and actually airs today, but it fits perfectly with the editorial that comes out with the Wall Street Journal. The title of it is A $2 Trillion Deficit for Fiscal 2023. As a budget fight seizes Congress, the Congressional Budget Office shows spending reality. Now, you might remember a while back when we were being told by the president, Joe Biden, that indeed he reduced the deficit by $1.7 trillion. He did not. We just talked about how when we had additional spending during COVID and then when we didn't have spending, that really wasn't any kind of reduction. But nevertheless, he makes that claim. It turns out now that the actual deficit is not $0.5 trillion. It's not $1 trillion. It's not $1.5 trillion. It's going to be $2 trillion. For those of us a little bit older, we can remember when under Ronald Reagan, the federal budget for the first time was $1 trillion. The entire budget was $1 trillion. Now we're talking about the deficit. The gap between what we raise in taxes and what we spend is $2 trillion. And again, he says, as Washington is girding for a spending showdown, as Republicans and Democrats strategize how to get more of what they want from a divided Congress. But whatever happens in the political drama, the editors of the Wall Street Journal say, the budget reality, not to forget, is that the deficit for the fiscal year ends was projected to be $1.7 trillion. Now it's going to be $2 trillion. $1.7 trillion is about $13,000 for every household. And I love how they end, because keep in mind that President Biden's soaring deficit comes despite a growing economy, and that spending on his so-called Inflation Reduction Act and infrastructure law will accelerate in coming years. So the spending is going to be worse in the future than it is right now. Total receipts are down about 10% year over year owing to slower growth. And as a result, that's why you have this particular disaster of a $2 trillion deficit. And they end their editorial by saying, remember when President Biden claimed to have reduced the deficit by $1.7 trillion? They say that was always a con, but now he can truthfully claim to be the $2 trillion deficit man, indeed. Each administration spends more than it takes in. The budget always is a problem. National debt goes up under Republicans and Democrats, but it is skyrocketing right now under this president, and a reason to once again consider who you're going to vote for next November. I'll be back right after this.
Imagine only 37% of the math teachers in your local schools knew how to do multiplication and division. Would you be concerned? Here's something more distressing. A recent study revealed that only 37% of Christian pastors in America shape their beliefs about issues using the Bible. No wonder we have so many challenges. We're ignoring God's timeless wisdom. Point of View is dedicated to delivering the news you can't get anywhere else. And we look at every issue through the lens of God's Word. Help equip millions of Americans to turn our nation back to God by joining the Point of View Truth Team. Learn how today at pointofview.net or call 1-800-347-5151. Join the Truth Team. pointofview.net and 800-347-5151.
They said the movie Barbie is subversive, woke, promotes feminism, but I couldn't hate it. It was too clever and beautiful and genuinely funny. A parody of feminism, Barbie, and Mattel itself. The opening scene takes place on a rocky beach where little girls are playing tea party with baby dolls. Barbie appears, larger than life, in her black and white striped bathing suit. Awestruck, the girls smash their baby dolls on the rocks, a jarring reminder of society's denigration of women's motherly role. Then, we're introduced to the feminist utopia that is Barbie Land. The family simply doesn't exist there. There is a pregnant Midge. Didn't we discontinue her? Wonders the Mattel CEO, played by Will Ferrell. Each Barbie lives in her own house. The houses have no outer walls. The Barbies can see each other. They greet one another in the morning and affirm, love, and support one another throughout the day. Who needs a family? Who needs men? All Barbies have meaningful jobs. Doctors, airline pilots, astronauts. A Barbie is president, and the Supreme Court is all Barbies. The Kens do something called beach. Daily Mail columnist Sarah Vine calls Barbie a deeply anti-man movie. Every male character is either an idiot, a bigot, or a sad, rather pathetic loser. Barbie's purpose, as she understands it, is to help little girls grow up to run the real world. Margot Robbie, the perfect Barbie, winks at the little girls surrounded by their broken baby dolls, as if to reassure them, "Ladies, we've got this." When Barbie travels to the real world, she realizes she and the other Barbies have failed. "You represent everything wrong with our culture," a teenager tells her. Co-writer and producer Greta Gerwig's previous movies portray men as oppressive authority figures. Her good men are disrespected or demeaned by female characters. Here, the Mattel executives are buffoonishly authoritarian. The Kens and real-world fathers are weak and compliant. Behold, feminism's rotten fruit. For Point of View, I'm Penna Dexter.
Listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Back for a few more minutes. Let me just cover a couple of quick items, and they will be quick. And next hour, we're going to be talking with the founders of the Live Big Foundation. And if you know of an individual, or maybe you have lost a loved one and could benefit from this incredible outreach that is being developed and will really help parents and grandparents that are struggling with the loss of a child for a variety of different reasons, I think you will really benefit from that. So we'll get off some of the political issues and try to minister to some of the individuals that have faced such great losses in their lives. But let me just mention, first of all, one of the articles that I have posted is by Rich Lowry, which has the provocative title, "Joe Biden is Corrupt." Now, the reason I did that is this isn't exactly new information. As a matter of fact, we've been pointing out the fact that there has been this sort of almost constant drumbeat of the things that we found out about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and the Biden family and influence peddling and all the rest. And the point he makes, and you can read it for yourself, is that even if we had no more information, no more revelations coming from the House investigation, there is more than enough. That being said, it is also very true that much of the mainstream press or the corporate press has not covered any of this. And so you can have a very divided country in which a lot of people recognize that this influence peddling is going on for some time, is the reason why now there is conversation in the House of Representatives to move forward with articles of impeachment against Joe Biden. And you have half of the country if they don't get their news from sources like Point of View or even some of the more conservative outlets are completely unaware of this. Recognize that they were very successful during the campaign 3 years ago, in which a lot of people didn't know there was a Hunter Biden laptop. I think most people maybe know that now, but they don't know all the other details. So this is probably one of the better articles by an individual who's, you know, hardly a Trump supporter, who nevertheless is saying, you know, if we know anything else, if this was all we know, there's more than enough. And of course, there are other shoes that I guarantee are going to drop there as well. So I did want you to have access to that. It is something maybe later on in the week we can cover in more detail, even on our weekend edition. But I want to move on to another article that I wanted to acknowledge because we have listeners in New Mexico. When I was in Pagosa Springs recently, I got a chance to run into and talk with a number of our listeners in New Mexico. And even if you don't live in New Mexico, you probably have heard about the governor of New Mexico. And this article, I think, begins by, what did she think was going to happen? New Mexico's Democratic governor has been making headlines around the country since she decided her election to a statewide office gave her the power to suspend the Constitution of the United States. What we're talking about here is an executive order that temporarily, I love how they always use the word temporarily, banning guns from being carried, either openly or concealed, in Albuquerque or in the county surrounding it. And as the writer Joe Saunders points out, as surely as night follows day, as clockwork as the swallows return to Capistrano, and as predictable as Americans who object fiercely to be pushing around by the government for no good reason, gun owners in the state of New Mexico responded by rallying in Albuquerque on Sunday. One of the reports said probably 100 gun rights supporters turned out in the Old Town section of Albuquerque to show their support for the Second Amendment. You sometimes wonder if this is done to try to stimulate or spawn some kind of overreaction, which would then give justification for declaring martial law, locking down the country, whatever it might be. But in this particular case, the governor of New Mexico, I think, miscalculated, because you have the district attorney there, who is a Democrat, who is appointed by her, who went on to say, as an officer of the court, I cannot and will not enforce something that is clearly unconstitutional. Well, good for him. And if you think that that's only there for our listeners out there in California, one of the more liberal progressive members of the Congress from California would be Ted Lieu, and he actually also has been very critical about that, saying that this again should not be framed as a public health order. And as a result, you've seen that there are probably a number of people that are now pretty much convinced that this was a misstep. And you can see what happens when a governor goes too far and begins to lose control of her state's biggest city. So we'll continue to watch what happens in New Mexico. I have a pretty good idea what's going to happen in the federal courts, but nevertheless, just wanted to report that in case you hadn't heard that. And ending today with a very good piece by our friend Victor Davis Hanson. He's been on the program with many times before, because as I mentioned just a minute ago, now there's all sorts of talk about an impeachment of Joe Biden. Whether you think that should be happening or not, what Victor Davis Hanson points out is it's the old what is sauce for the liberal goose is not supposed to be sauce for the conservative gander. In other words, now all of a sudden you have, with the possibility of an impeachment inquiry looming, all sorts of shrieks of outrage from individuals. And now, for the first time, the left are suddenly voicing warnings about how calling for an impeachment of the president could undermine the system and even the presidency. And again, he points out that in modern times, the nation is not rushed to impeach a president without a special counsel investigation to determine whether or not the chief executive was guilty of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. But you know the history if you've been listening to this program, because the first impeachment came really, as he says, on the fumes of the exhaustive but fruitless 22-month, $40 million special special counsel investigation, all designed to try to find him guilty of Russian collusion, in which they did not find it. And when that did not work, then the Democrats moved to a second try based upon a phone call with, of course, the president of Ukraine. Now we hear a lot more about Ukraine, wondering if indeed there was some collusion involving Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. And as Victor Davis Hanson points out, well, Donald Trump was proven right. The Biden family is not just corrupt, but in particular, Joe Biden is the head of the family and vice president, and intervened in the internal politics of an aid recipient by threatening not to delay, but rather to cancel outright U.S. aid to Ukraine unless it fired Viktor Shokin, who was the Ukrainian prosecutor looking into the dealings of Hunter Biden. So, as you've seen before, it is permissible for people on the left to do just about anything and to violate the Constitution in any kind of way. But just imagine what happens when somebody on the right decides to do that. Excuse me. It is one of those things. It's one of those things where you sometimes find individuals that are not able to actually take seriously some of the comments being made by some of the liberals. And so as a result, that particular situation unfolds. Probably a good time to have a break. I don't usually have my voice go away for me. I'm sure it will return. But let me just real quickly point out that when we come back from the break, we're going to have a great opportunity to hear about the Live Big Foundation. Greg and Tina Clifton will be in studio with us. We'll be spending some time talking with them and really giving you an idea of what you might be able to do and how you might be able to minister to individuals who are devastated by the loss of a loved one. So I think we're going to have a great interview with them. And again, I want to encourage you to go to the website, which is pointofview.net. Did an interview with Pete Hegseth. We have some of the articles I've been mentioning here as well. And we'll take a break. I'll fix my voice. And we'll be back right after this.
Many years ago, they began saying that we live in the information age. Well, today there is so much information coming at us from every direction. The hardest thing is to discern which issues are really important and how can I make a positive impact with